Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders, featuring the stories and songs of elders from the Native nations who lived and still live along the Lewis and Clark Trail. I'm Arlie Nesky of the Diné Nation. In the next hour, we'll feature the Confederated Tribes of the Yakima Nation. We'll look at the toxic legacy of the nearby Hanford Nuclear Reservation and share a rare look at the music and practices of the Shaker Church. We'll meet two women who are learning to deal with diabetes and helping others along the way. Then we'll visit with a Yakima storyteller. But first, we'll meet Yakima elder and activist Russell Jim.
I described the horror stories to my aunt, and she went to my father and said, "You can send the rest of your children back to that school if you want to. This one is not going."
This is Wisdom of the Elders. Stay with us. This is the collective known as the Fire This Time, performing Warrior's Dub, published by Ryko Music Incorporated. the collective known as the Fire This Time, performing Warrior's Dub. Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Nesky. The late afternoon sun scattered in the waters of the Snake River, and the river people danced. Each of the 200 men beat his own drum and formed a semicircle around the white men from the east, who sat in a river camp, nodding their approval. Some of the white men continued to work, unloading their canoes and cooking the dog meat. The river people danced, and their dance was a prayer. For there had been many prophecies of the coming of a different kind of man, and this man would bring wealth and new ways, but would also usher in an era of terrible chaos and destruction. It was October 16, 1805. Lewis and Clark had arrived at the confluence of the Columbia and Snake Rivers. They camped in an area known today as Sacagawea State Park near Pasco, Washington. Great numbers of people came there to gather and preserve the fall salmon. These were the people of the river. Clark called them Sokulks. Today they are called the Wanapum, one of the many tribes in the densely populated Columbia Basin. The Yakima, Klickitat, Palouse, and dozens of other tribes formed an interrelated continuity of people sharing similar beliefs and lifestyles. Clark noted that the river people seemed to live in a state of comparative happiness. Men and women shared equally in the work. They venerated the elderly, and they lived in peace with their neighbors. In the Wanapum village of Panah, on the banks of the Columbia, the river people danced. It was 30 or 40 years later. They danced in the tule mat longhouse to a new prophecy brought by a visionary who had died and returned to life. He was called Smohalla, the dreamer. In his journey, he had learned a new way called Washini, and he taught it to his small band of followers. He said that the Indian should never cut his braids and should always eat traditional foods and continue the vision quest. He said, "Men who work cannot dream, and wisdom comes to us in dreams." And then he showed the people his dance, and he taught them the new songs. In this way, Smohalla fought the influence of the missionaries and government officials who wanted to make the Indian give up the old ways and become farmers. Smohalla said, "You ask me to cut grass and make hay and sell it and be rich like white men, but how dare I cut off my mother's hair?" The Washini way spread from camp to camp across the Columbia Basin to the Rocky Mountains. When the Indian Wars raged in the late 1800s, Smohalla refused to support them. The Washini was a way of peace. In the Treaty of 1855, 14 tribes north of the Columbia were forced to cede 11 million acres to the U.S. government and were confined to the 1.21 million acre Yakima Reservation in south central Washington. Under Smohalla's influence, the Wanapum disregarded the treaty. To this day, they live in their home village site in a small group of houses called Priest Rapids. Representatives of the 14 tribes make up the Yakima Tribal Council. The Yakima Indian Nation co-manages the Columbia and its tributaries in the region. Salmon continue to be the lifeblood of the nearly 8,400 Yakima tribal members. The Washini faith has evolved into what is now called Washit, Seven Drums, or the Longhouse religion. Washit is celebrated each Sunday in longhouses and Priest Rapids and throughout the Northwest. Though many of the river people cut their hair and wear white men's clothes, the drums of Smohalla still ring over the waters of the Columbia, and the river people dance. I'm Arlie Nesky, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. Yakima Elder Russell Jim has traveled the globe watching indigenous people from around the world struggle to retain their identity and traditions. A board member for the Center for World Indigenous Studies, Jim has learned that in order to save a culture, one can't sit idly by. One must intervene. For today's Elder Wisdom, Brian Bull has more.
One of nine children, Russell Jim grew up in the Yakima Territory near Toppenish, Washington, along the Yakima River. He learned early on that the course of life is much like a river. People either go with the flow or against the current. Yet when he was much younger, he was swept away in the waves of Indian children, taken from their families and placed into government boarding schools.
When I came home from the Chemawa Indian boarding school, I described the horror stories to my aunt. And she went to my father and said, "You can send the rest of your children back to that school if you want to. This one is not going." And she said, "If he has to go to school, you find a place close by here where I can watch him. If you do not, I'll take him to the hills and you'll never find us."
Besides helping him escape the hardships of boarding school, Jim's aunt also shared all she could of the Yakima ways.
While I was being raised by my aunt, as I say, we'd travel horseback or by wagon. And we lived between Toppenish and Wapato along the Yakima River. And the closest longhouse was in Wapato, so we'd go there on Sunday mornings. And we'd pull in, and there'd be other wagons and horses there. And eventually, once in a while, you'd see a pickup and maybe a truck. And when you went in, the longhouse was full every Sunday. And he listed this great orations by people, great songs. Many of those songs are not here anymore because the elders took it with them because some of the younger generations just didn't learn them. These songs are so sacred. When you sing them, you communicate directly with your maker because that's where these songs came from.
In his lifetime, Jim has seen some parts of Yakima traditional life forgotten or neglected. He says it's time now to help young people reconnect with their heritage.
As we say, without my past, I have no future. And our theme here among the Yakima is that we vow to preserve and protect this land and its resources for those children yet unborn. That's our oath of life. People think this is a North American saying, but it isn't. It's from Kenya, and they say, "You do not inherit this land from your ancestors. It is loaned to you by your children." And I think that's profound. It's similar to our thinking. But our religion remains intact. Our culture remains basically intact. But we are going to lose it if the younger generation do not start speaking the language and understanding it. The earth cannot hear you if you do not speak to the earth with your native tongue through the foods and medicines. And the animals understand you. They had vowed when the Creator said, "I am going to make human beings here now, but I need someone to help sustain their life, their bodies, their hearts. And I'm asking you, the first people, if you will help take care of them," which will mean giving your bodies, your life, to them. And the first to speak up was the fish, the salmon. The next was the deer, then the elk, then the food out of the ground, and then the berries. And that's why in our feasts we set the food in that order. And there was a time when, as in a communion in our first foods feasts, we're told as the food is set before us, and before anyone else eats, we're told, "When I name this food, you take a small portion and eat it." Which we would do, and an elder would stand up and said, "This portion of food is going to this part of your body."
Jim's other mission is keeping the land and its people healthy. Some tribal members fear that the nearby Hanford nuclear plant has hurt the salmon run in the Columbia River and the well-being of the Yakima Nation. Jim says more than 30 years ago, he began to suspect a link between the Hanford plant and higher rates of rheumatoid arthritis among his people.
And during my work here on the Hanford Reservation, I was called by a doctor out of Tennessee and asked if I was the guy that was making this statement. I said yes, and he said, "Well, I want you to know that he studied mining operations, every type of mining operations for years, and he found that uranium causes a malady very similar to rheumatoid arthritis. But even before that, by 1976 and 77, I suspect that many of our problems came out of Hanford because of the releases, although they denied there was any major releases out of Hanford.
Releases, which the Washington State Department of Health says include leakage from radioactive waste holding tanks, discharges of chemicals into the air, and the release of river water that was used to cool hot reactor cores back into the Columbia River Basin.
In 77, in fact, I went to the Indian Health Service and asked for their assistance. And I was told in April of 77 that because of no proof that anything came out of Hanford, the Indian Health Service could not help.
Jim says in 1986, the Yakima Nation became the only tribe to help pen the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, which determined where to keep all the high-level waste. While Hanford was among nine places proposed, the tribe convinced energy officials to exclude Hanford as a storage option.
But in late February and early March of 1986, the DOE was forced to release 19,000 reclassified documents. And so upon review, they had to admit that there was a tremendous amount of releases into the system, into the environment. Not only 8 million curies of radioactivity a year going into the Columbia River, but 340,000 curies of iodine-131 released into the air in 1945 alone. And in 1946, there were 76,000 curies.
Jim is focusing his remaining years on preserving natural resources and instilling tribal youth with interest and respect for their Yakima traditions. While he was spared having his culture wrested away from him by the early 20th century boarding school system, he doesn't want others to lose theirs through apathy. He notes that for everything the Yakima Nation went through, the tribe's spiritual beliefs have endured.
And I find it late in life, realizing what my father used to tell me, look at yourself once in a while, observe yourself, talk to yourself once in a while. You don't have to be crazy to talk to yourself. And when you eventually understand what he means, you begin to realize, you know, my golly, you know, I wonder what I look like in the eyes of other people. Do I act arrogant, you know, and they know all this. And so you become very careful. But that also means you become respectful. We prevail with dignity and integrity much better than a lot of people in this country, as few as we are, in fact.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Acting News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce Tribe. He lives with his wife, two kids, and three cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Speaking Native, linguist Don Addison teaches us an essential Yakima phrase. In Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehurst-Skelton looks at environmental issues surrounding the toxic Hanford nuclear facility. In Tribal Rhythms with Nico Wind, we'll get a rare glimpse into the Shakers and their music. And in Health and Healing, Rose Hybear introduces us to two Yakima women who are dealing with diabetes and helping others to do the same. This is Wisdom of the Elders. Welcome back. This is Wisdom of the Elders.
Hey-ya, hey. Hey-ya, ho, ho.
Halito, I'm Don Addison, and this is Speaking Native. Yakima is one of the northwestern dialects of the Sahaptian language family. Some Yakima elders believe that the language should not be written anywhere until the afterlife. Research and educational programs, however, do exist, ensuring the preservation of this language and its use. Pinawit means "this is the Indian way," an expression which resonates with the Yakima people to the present day. Pinawit. Until next time, Yakoke.
Choctaw linguist Don Addison teaches Native American languages at the University of Oregon and other colleges in Oregon. The traditional home of the Yakima Nation stretches from Horse Heaven Hills through the Yakima River Valley up to the Cascade Mountains and out to a great bend in the Columbia River called the Hanford Reach. It is also home to the controversial Hanford Nuclear Reservation in South Central Washington. Today, Judy Bluehorse Skelton takes us along the Columbia River, where ancient rock paintings can still be seen and where the Yakima people are reclaiming their land and their cultural history.
I remember the first time I saw the rock paintings along the Columbia River. It was a white-hot, sunny afternoon, and storyteller Ed Edmo and I were introducing Native American students from Portland to the plants and petroglyphs of the eastern Columbia Gorge. We were in the home of the Yakima Nation, and with their permission, we picked our way along the narrow trail of stones and stiff yellow grass that wove in and out of the chimney rock. Ancient images emerged from the stone rock face. Students squinted to make out the pictures. Edmo, who remembers the Columbia before the last dam was built, told stories of the river and the people while the sun glinted off the water like diamonds. Ancient and sacred sites of the Yakima people are many and have been found throughout South Central Washington. The Hanford Reach is the only free-flowing stretch of the Columbia River in the United States. It flows through a spectacular landscape of towering cliffs, shifting sand dunes, and sweeping vistas across a dry, grassy plain. Today, it's also the site of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. In the 1940s, 540 square miles of land was appropriated by the U.S. government to establish a high-security military compound. By the 1970s, restrictions eased and the Yakima Nation established their rights to return to the Hanford Reach to regenerate their cultural ways. In cooperation with other tribes in the region and through federal, state, and tribal laws, the Yakima began protecting sacred sites and cultural natural resources. However, today, concerns about contamination from the Hanford Nuclear Reservation persist. As salmon people, the Yakima are concerned about shrinking salmon runs. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers proposed dredging a barge canal through the reach, which would have eliminated salmon spawning grounds. The Yakima also observed that pesticides and herbicides used by farmers were polluting the Yakima River, a tributary of the Columbia. There were no salmon at all by the 1970s. Working with the state of Washington, the Yakima helped to create new laws to prevent pesticide runoff and chemical dumping into the rivers. They now have numerous projects to restore fish runs on the Yakima River. Central to the tribe's economic health are sustainable forestry practices, and the Yakima have developed a unique system called winter logging. Once the ground is frozen 18 inches down below the surface and is covered with snow, then a crew can get into an area to log. The snow and frozen ground prevents soil compaction and protects vegetation from being trampled by logging trucks and workers. Winter logging preserves a healthy understory of plants and soil and protects any cultural artifacts that may still be on the site. Through tribal archaeological efforts, including implementation of the Native American Graves and Repatriation Act, many artifacts and human remains from ancient villages and sacred sites are being found and returned to the Yakima Nation. Sacred sites are receiving the protection they deserve, including petroglyphs, which have been vandalized in the past. The tribe is working to carefully restore the rock paintings, preserving these enduring legacies for future generations. With each breath, with each step, with each heartbeat, Osadadu.
Educator, writer, and herbalist Judy Bluehorse Skelton is Nez Perce, Chickasaw, and Cherokee. She teaches, gardens, and serves in the vibrant community of Portland, Oregon. A crowd gathers in a plain hall with rustic wooden benches and floors. An altar is situated at the front and a pot-belly stove at the side. A collection of bells, handheld school bells, are assembled on the altar with a cross and three candles. Everyone prays and sings in their native tongue. On today's Tribal Rhythms, we are privileged to get a rare glimpse into the music of the Shaker Church, one of the few 19th century indigenous religions that are still practiced across the Northwest. Nico Wind has more.
John Slocum was an off-reservation logger and a member of the Squaxin tribe near Olympia, Washington. In 1881, he claimed to have taken ill, died, and miraculously to have come back to life. He began preaching a doctrine inspired by visions he had while in the afterlife. He built a church a year later. Again he fell ill, and again he recovered. This time, though, the people pointed out that it was his wife's shaking that was really the source of the power that healed him. Mary Slocum's contribution to the establishment of this religion also became the source of its name. Oh, 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 oh. The shaking was interpreted as a manifestation of the Holy Spirit and became an important part of Shaker services. The Shaker Church was officially incorporated in Washington in 1910. It is one of the many Native American religious communities that use music extensively in their gatherings. In the prayers and hymns, frequent reference to God and the Holy Spirit are intermixed with layers of Native cultural beliefs and customs. More than just a social construct, it is a living, breathing tradition that is the center of many Native lives today.
My first vivid impression of the Shaker Church was when I was a little girl. My dad asked if we went to go to the Shaker Church. They usually have meetings after 8 o'clock. And so we went to White Swan, which is about 27 miles away from where we lived.
Lorintha Umtuch is a Yakima native who was raised on the reservation by her parents. She's a tribal judge, and she knows the traditions and the dreams of her people. She deeply understands the multifaceted nature of the various and sometimes conflicting religious landscapes in the Northwest.
It's all lit by candles, and then they have shaker bells up front. And one side of the room is where the women sit, and the other side of the room is where the men sit. And so they start singing their songs, and the people would walk up front, and they would grab their bells, and then they would start ringing the bells, and they would sing the songs. And when you first start out, there's not that many people, like 20, but by the end of the evening, you have about maybe 80 people in the Shaker Church. They sing and dance, and when they're ringing the bells and they're dancing, they say they're shaking.
Are you washed in the blood, in the soul-cleansing blood of the Lamb?
The Shakers maintain some practices that are common to other Native religions. Shakers practice purification and healing rites. Both the Shaker Church and the Longhouse religions celebrate first fruits ceremonies. The Shaker hymns, the bells, and the rhythmic movement create an atmosphere of spiritual inspiration.
To hear the bells and hear the people singing is just, oh, it just fills you up. Because the bells, they have different sized bells. The men have two bells that they ring with their hands. And the women, they have their bells too. And they're lined up on both sides of the hall. They sing and dance. And when they're ringing the bells and they're dancing, they call. They say they're shaking. The men are wearing big boots and the women are wearing sturdy shoes. And you just hear the sounds of the bells and the feet going at the same time. And they sing these very melodious and beautiful songs. And it's beautiful. You can just get caught up in it because the songs are so beautiful.
Shakers are really strict. 1910 are strict. They can't gamble. They can't drink. They can't smoke.
Dolores Miscon Martin, born in 1924, is the daughter of a Shaker minister from White Swan, Washington.
In a Shaker way, you can't explain it, because like God would say, you have to pray for what you want to know. You have to pray for everything that you want to know, and you pray for it, and it'll come to you.
Dolores remembers traveling as a little girl to the dalles on the Columbia River during fishing season and attending services at the Shaker village.
When clear over to the dalles, to this island, they call it What's Up. And we stayed there, and people used to come there. It was well built then at the time. No benches, nothing. One side men's and one side women's. And they had their Sunday ceremony.
Shaker Village, a ramshackle collection of weather-beaten buildings behind a motel, still stands today in the shadow of the giant Dalles Dam. It's silent here. Hot winds are working to pull the walls apart. But you can sense the spirit that moved here and still moves across Indian country. For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Nico Wind.
Tribal Rhythms is written by ethnomusicologist Don Addison, produced by Clark Salisbury and Larry Johnson, and hosted by Nico Wind. Thanks to the Library of Congress and the Washington State Arts Commission. We also thank recording producer Kava Shahidi and the Native American Baha'i Institute on the Navajo Reservation in Hawk, Arizona. It's no secret that Americans are getting fat. In 1999, 34% of American adults were overweight, and an additional 30% were obese. And the rate is increasing. More than 20 million people in America have type 2 diabetes. In Native America, there are even greater rates of obesity and an epidemic of diabetes. In today's Health and Healing, Rose Hybear explores the struggle against the disease for two brave women of the Yakima tribe.
When I was younger, I used to weigh 369 pounds.
Registered nurse Evelyn Umtuch is a diabetic. She knows firsthand the root causes of obesity and the struggle her people face.
I came from a poor background. We ate just what we could. Grandma never allowed us any pop or ice cream or candy and that kind of stuff. So we just lived off the land, and Grandma raised cows, and that's how we lived. But after I got married, it was like turning a couple of kids loose in school, my husband and I, because we found out we could make our own banana splits. We could do all kinds of stuff that we never, ever, ever had before. So we just both gained weight. So one day I was sitting in a chair. I was at home by myself. He had just gone to work. And I was sitting in a chair, and I looked down, and I was hanging over. And I couldn't believe that was me, and I sat there and bawled. And while I was crying, he walked back in. He had this feeling about it, and he came back in. He said, I knew I had to come back, but I don't know why. And when he came in, we sat down and talked, and he says, well, I'll go on a diet with you.
Well,
Over the ages, Native Americans adapted to a feast or famine way of life by developing a slower metabolism and a tendency to store fat. Now, with today's lifestyle of less activity and abundant food, the result is an obese population.
First, he took away my Pepsi. That was murder. Then he took away my Snickers. And that was a killer. It'd be like every 2 weeks we'd take something away. And then he brought a saucer one day, and he said, whatever goes in the saucer, that's what you'll eat. And that's how I start losing weight.
Dolores George is an active 65-year-old Yakima elder, a medicine singer and traditional artist who is blessed with a positive attitude. When she was diagnosed with diabetes in 1985, she weighed 260 pounds.
People talk about alcoholism. Well, food can kill you too if you don't eat the right things. I didn't join any weight club or anything. I just changed how I thought of food and what I ate. So I switched over to fresh fruits, sugarless drinks, fresh vegetables. Everything was baked or broiled. And so I think it was a year or so, I lost over 100 pounds. I couldn't believe it was like having a rebirth in life, you know.
Unlike Dolores, Evelyn Umtouch's battle with diabetes started in her own mind.
But it was quite a shock to me to become a diabetic, and I wouldn't admit it. I was in complete denial. And I went to the clinic, and I talked to Dr. Hadaka, and he brought my chart in and slammed it on the front of me and said, okay, Umtouch, let's come to some truths here. You have diabetes, just face it. So I looked at it a long time, and I just nodded my head. I think that was the day I really started to accept it.
As diabetes coordinator, Evelyn sees the growth of the disease among her people. The denial that she experienced frustrates her effort to care for the people who need it.
I think that prevention probably is the biggest thing. And we have to start with the young. As a grandmother and a mother, it's up to me to teach my family. They need to be aware that if they keep moving, bring their blood sugars down. That's the theme of our diabetes program, as a matter of fact, is keep moving.
For Wisdom of the Elders, this is Rose Highbear.
Health and Healing is written and produced by Larry Johnson in collaboration with KCUW LP FM Radio at the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indians and the Benton Foundation's Sound Partners for Community Health, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which is dedicated to improving health and healthcare for all Americans. For more information about our guests or to help support our program through Friends of Wisdom of the Elders, check out our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. Coming up on Artist Circle, Bruce Crestman introduces us to a woman who weaves history, culture, and tradition along with tulis into her baskets. Then, on Turtle Island Storytellers, Yakima elder Johnson Maninik tells a story about the mountains of the Cascade Range.
The wisdom of these mountains watch over us, how we conduct ourselves and how we behave.
Stay with us. I'm Arlene Eskay, and this is Wisdom of the Elders.
Wisdom of the Elders is an American Indian nonprofit corporation located in Portland, Oregon. We record and preserve oral history and cultural arts of American Indian storytellers, historians, artists, and song carriers, and share their messages with diverse public audiences.
Brown earth color woman takes me into the secrets of her size. When I step into the brown of her eyes, I find sight of special dreams, fluttering eyelashes and fluttering hearts, dancing in magic no one understands. When I step into the brown of her eyes, I find the comfort of a friend sharing shelter when only a friend can know to. When I step into the brown of her eyes, She teaches loving through caring, snuggling softly in my heart, helping me to just feel good. When I step into the brown of her eyes.
The arts of basket weaving, beadwork, and many other ancient cultural practices are alive and well in the Yakima Nation today. We can still enjoy these arts thanks to the dedicated culture bearers who take on the responsibility of learning the art and transmitting it to the next generation. On today's Artist Circle, Bruce Crespin introduces Yakima basket weaver and song carrier Vivian Harrison, who takes seriously her calling as a tribal artist.
I used to see these root digging bags and huckleberry baskets, and the corn husk bags, and I would just look at them. I'd turn them over in my hand and look at them and wonder how they were put together.
Yakima basket weaver Vivian Harrison realizes that for traditional Yakima ways of life to be revived among her people, they must be shared.
One of the teachings for our people is that if we have enough for ourselves to survive through this season, then anything extra is to share, to give away. It's unbecoming to be greedy, to keep, and to hoard. It's just not a good thing.
Ceremonies commemorating major life events such as marriage, the birth of a child, and deaths are important times for feasting, prayer, songs, and the giving of gifts. Some giveaways at the heart of Yakima culture are being revived these days as an expression of generosity among Yakima people. On the day we spoke to Vivian, she was asked to help produce gifts.
My cousin popped in to ask me to be in a wedding trade, which is really unusual. We don't have wedding trades very often anymore. When the families of the bride and the families of the groom trade with one another, that would include aunts, grandparents, and parents, it would be the women folk on both sides that trade. And this is in to recognize the bride and groom that they are a couple.
The groom's family gives deer meat, salmon, buckskin, and other items the men use daily. The bride's family trades female items like beadwork, baskets, and even roots and berries as part of the ceremony.
I already have a few things like beaded bags and the root bags, and I don't think I can make a corn husk by the August, I'm not sure. I already have some things. I'll just need to make a few more items to be prepared.
Yo-ho, gana weho, haine, no hayo hea. Gana weho, haine, hoene, hoene, gaina.
Vivian is also a traditional singer, a kind of cultural memory bank. She preserves the personal medicine songs of her family. A few years ago, she was asked to carry the songs of another singer.
When I went to a religious ceremony in Oregon, I met a lady from Spokane, and she was a medicine singer. Because of her many illnesses, she asked me to help her with her songs, the ones that she carried. I agreed to do this for her, to take care of her songs until someone in her own family would be able to sing the songs and take care of them.
Among the Yakima, medicine songs are presented but once each year at winter dances to honor the ancestors and give strength and guidance to the owners of the songs. These winter ceremonies are accompanied by giveaways and have been held between the full moons of December and March since ancient times.
In our language, it's called Wumpsha. And it's very, very old. Some of the songs are very, very old. It's a really long, complicated process before a song can be sung. The songs have a spirit of their own. They need to be cared for like you would care for a child. When a song is sung, it's at a gathering with other singers. at the time when a song is being sung, items that you made with your own hands need to be placed on the floor where you're going to walk and sing. This is like giving these items to the spirit of the song. After you're done singing that song, then the people present are then allowed to take those items.
Yo-ho, gana we-ho, hai-ne, no hayo hiya. Gana we-ho, hai-ne, ho-we-ne, ho-we-ne, gana we-ya hiya.
As long as I take care of these songs, then these songs, the spirits of these songs will take care of me and my family.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Bruce Crespin.
Bruce Crespin is a California Mission Indian and traditional basket weaver who works as a cultural heritage specialist for the U.S. Department of the Interior in Portland, Oregon. Yakima elder Johnson Meninik speaks of his people's legends and shares his wisdom on today's Turtle Island Storytellers. To Johnson, mountains are living beings that have taken care of the people for thousands of years. Let's listen in.
Today, my relatives and my friends, we're talking about the Creator's law, how the Creator created the law that we must follow the water, the land, and the air that is our life. This law has a meaning to our native people, and it's a sacred law that we follow. And as we know, in the Northwest Country, our people worship these laws in our sacred ceremonies and religious ceremonies. You hear so many times in the history books that you have to use paper to write a document. Our people never use paper for document. We look at the mountains that stands, that provides nourishment for the resources, provides watershed into their streams, into the rivers, into the ocean. And the mountain will hold these resources for the women also. The men has to harvest the salmon and the animals, the big game, small game, the avian, the one that flies. The women has to take care of the roots and berries. And our spiritual people take care of the medicine. In this way, our people have lived for thousands of years, generation after generation. We have to rely on these resources for our livelihood. And we look after them because the resources cannot speak for themselves. We are the people that has to speak for the resources. And these mountains that stand, they are the witness of how we live. We have proven that our forefathers have seen the major floods, the fires, the cold winters, and they were able to survive because rely on the resources for their livelihood. They knew how to live with the land. Now, the five sacred mountains that we have in the Northwest here, the first one was called Waxham. But jealousy started back then that the Mount Adams called Patu got jealous because their man, the sun, would come out every day and greet Waxham first. So they got in a fight. The Waxham is no longer there, but Mount Adams is there. The other sister, Mount Rainier, is called Tahoma. And those keep the resources at the Cascade Mountains. The other is Mount Hood, some people call Waist. And Loa Light is the youngest one, St. Helens. The wisdom of these mountains watch over us, how we conduct ourselves and how we behave. The disasters that they had, it got dark, the flood, the fire, cold. This is a reminder for us people. We must remember our heritage is very important. Not too long ago, about 20-some years ago, we were reminded by St. Helens eruption. A lot of people had a fear. But our teaching by our elders is, if you follow your own laws, the Creator will look after you and take care of you. When you do not follow these laws, and you will be punished, not by the judge, but by the Creator. That's when you will cry and your tears will fall. Your big tears will fall. Somebody, please help me. But if you know how to resurrect yourself, remember your culture, remember your heritage, take care of the resources, and they will look after you. But if you forget these resources and find other new ways, this is the time it'll tell. You never know what you had until you lost it all, then it's too late. You can never get him back. The foreign products that are here now has done away with a lot of our young people. Alcohol, now drugs, and many other things that had happened. The treaties that were made, now our people go to service. A lot of them never come back. But the iron in the whole thing is, the ones that have came back alive, they came to our gatherings and told a story that I remembered a song, I remembered my language, I remembered the words. My life has been spared, and I'm happy to be home. So there is a strong gift that the Creator provided for us. If we follow it truthfully, a lot of us people make mistakes. We kill the game, and we sell it. We kill the fish, we sell it. We're selling our own resources when we're supposed to share with one another as brothers and sisters, the elders and children. So that's why when us elders are asked to provide this kind of information, we hope that our people are listening to the teachings we pass on. Because they are gone, they are no longer here. But the words still live within our hearts. We hope that in the future, some more generations yet coming, yet unborn, can take this message and use it wisely. Because there's a big reward waiting for you.
Johnson Menainik is a living treasure of the Yakima Nation and lives in Toppenish, Washington. Special thanks to Turtle Island Storytellers editor, Carl Shanks. Today we have listened to the history, stories, and songs of the Yakima Nation, their natural environment by the shores of the Columbia, Klickitat, and Yakima Rivers, with its wind, its warm air, its abundance of salmon, gave the Indian people of this area a quality of life that many people don't realize existed on the earth. When Lewis and Clark traveled into the world of the salmon people, they documented their discovery in their journals, which created a snapshot in time. They told of beautifully productive rivers crowded with salmon, of healthy and prosperous people catching and drying and trading fish, of weddings and other ceremonies with their songs and dances. We acknowledge the salmon people of the Yakima Nation, who celebrate a way of life that has existed for thousands of years, and who continue in their efforts to preserve the forests and rivers for the generations to come. The salmon people exist so that fish stocks listed under the Endangered Species Act will return to abundance, and that prosperity, health, and well-being will be restored. We thank you for joining us today on Wisdom of the Elders Radio. I'm Arlie Neskai. Hagoanet, till we meet again.
Wisdom of the Elders Radio is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail at National Park Service, the Benton Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Oregon Arts Commission. Special thanks to our team, producers Clark Salisbury, Brian Bull, Judy Bluehorse-Skelton, Don Addison, Bruce Crespin, and Carl Shanks. Story editor and director, Larry Johnson. Program host, Arlie Neskahai. Tribal Rhythms host, Nico Wind. Web team, Clark Salisbury and Sean Dillon. Archivist, Paul Woodsong. Tribal liaison, Elaine Lanigan. Transcriber, Anna Kastner. Distribution manager, Beth Dillon. Executive producer, Rose Highbearer. Special thanks to our friends at Jack Straw Productions, Seattle, Washington. To Deborah Crosswell at the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. To our educational scholars, Larry McClure, Ray DeMolly, Sally Thompson, Jim Ronda, and Lauren Olson. And to American Indian Radio on satellite. Thanks to Paul Eubanks at Ten Wolves Productions and to Nico Wynn for providing our theme sounds. And special thanks to all the recording artists and music producers who generously shared their music for our program.
We will walk.
We will